All right, this is episode 48 of the Slide In Podcast. Great episode today. We talked about, is Johnny a better person than a fishing guide? Purtagons with soul, designing streamers with intentional hook orientation, you know, up, up, down, down, up, down, down, up. I think that's all of them. And fighting fish from a boat. Today's episode is brought to you by the Kelly Inn, which resides in West Yellowstone, just a few hundred feet from the National Park's entrance. I'm going to go off script here for a second. I was talking to a guy who was just swinging through, and he loves to fish the Madison when he drives through. And he says, yeah, I really want to come out here with my, but my wife and kids don't want to come stay at the slide, which one I kind of took as an insult. But, you know, there's if you're not into fishing, staying here isn't really the best place for you. So what did I do? I sent him to the Kelly Inn and I told him, use code SLIDE2025 for 15% off your stay. Kelly Inn's a great hotel up in West Yellowstone. You've got tons of restaurants, really good restaurants around there too. Buffalo Bar, Hank's, Madison Crossing, Yellowstone Brewing. I mean, there's tons of great food in West, all the Chinese restaurants, the pizza joints, everything. And a lot of that's walking distance. There's a McDonald's there, which, you know, where we are in a food desert down here, I run up to that McDonald's fairly often. They've got an indoor pool, hot tub. We've mentioned the casting pond, and the park is absolutely on fire with fishing right now. There's been a lot of nice brown trout taken up there. I got a couple last week. So sorry about the off-script ad read here. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's use code SLIDE2025 for 15% off your stay. The Kelly Inn, family-friendly comfort and world-class fishing all in one spot. And seriously, if you're going to come out here with a family and you want to do more than just fish, the Kelly Inn's your spot. All right, enjoy the episode. All right, welcome back to episode 48 of the Slide In Podcast. I'm Braden Anderson. That's Kelly Galt.
Welcome back.
Got a great show for you today.
How do we know that already?
What's that?
How do we know that already?
Well, because I'm deciding what we're going to talk about. So to me, everything's going to be great.
Got it.
You see the look of disapproval on his face? Keeps me up
at
night.
I look at you.
All right. We're going to start with, I'm basically just going to rip off one of my favorite podcasts.
Wait a minute. I got something to tell people.
What's that?
I just got out of the shower. This hot young lass, E. It was pretty cool. Except for she didn't really want to, so we had a little fight getting in the shower. The young lass happens to be Ellie. We have a little problem around here. Bingo.
Got it.
Deciding to compound the effects of the bear tearing everything we own alive up and rolled in all the bear shit.
Ellie rolled in the bear shit?
No, man. Oof. So I thought, what better than a father-daughter shower?
He's going to clip that. That's some weird.
And that weird. Oh, my God. And so, but I have to get over here, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I put her in the dump truck, went to the dump. I'm like, whoa, that can't be an ear smell. I'm like, I get out. I'm like, oh, my God. And so I wash her. It was quite a wrestling match.
Yeah, bet.
Like a lot of my dates. But it was like, oh, my God. And then I get out and I'm toweling her off and she sees her get away and she just takes off through my house rubbing against everything that she can rub against. But
good job,
we're having a little bear problem. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Now that we've
our boys are getting. Yeah, we're closed.
Now that we've closed the cabins, we'll talk about it.
Yeah. Well, she's been around all summer with her babies.
Yeah. So there's been a bear with two cubs. A bunch of folks have seen
three at one point.
Really?
Yeah.
A bunch of people have seen her across
she's
the
been
road.
Everywhere.
Been hanging out in the trees, been down, I mean, all over.
In my pasture, yeah. She's been all over.
Bunch
but
of people
she's been very
the
good
river.
Until now, but it is that time of year.
Yeah.
Then and Chuck found... has a cooler outside, which I thought was a beer cooler.
Well, he's also got a fridge.
That's my point. It isn't a beer cooler. It's a refrigerator outside.
And a cooler.
Hmm?
And a cooler. Both.
Oh, both?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She got into my beer cooler, had that giant one.
Yeah.
Shirley was in the house because... Mel and I were up hunting, and she stayed at the house, and she said it threw it against the wall. She wasn't sure what it was, but she'd already cleaned out all the, from streamer school, all the beers. Just empty. That probably pissed it off. But.
Yeah, probably. It pissed me off.
At any rate.
Yeah, so we've got a bear problem. Chuck has had a couple of bear run-ins. I mean,
twice.
I think he went 4 days. He got chased out of between the lakes by a grizzly, and then 4 days later, he's walking back to his trailer. Mm-hmm. I think the night before, two nights before, a bear had eaten all of his food.
Yeah,
buried a bunch of it, and then he walked out of his trailer to come to the shop, turned around, walking back, had a flashlight, had bear spray, because mm-hmm. he's a smart dude.
Now?
Well, it was good that he had the
freaking... I'm quite certain that we'll be selling bear spray again next year.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we'll be selling it.
yeah. After then, everybody here getting...
So the bear charged him, and he sprayed it, and then...
Did the sensible thing and ran to the shop.
Ran back to the shop.
I'm not sure running to the shop was a good idea, but...
I think it's hard possibly, to control.
Possibly after you sprayed it.
Did you see all the comments on Instagram about... I put that video up of Chuck and Jake's little bear adventure, and it said, send Kelly up there. I'm pretty sure he said he wanted to die this way.
Not necessarily want to do it now. Okay. I just said, I don't want to die in my sleep. I mean, at the end, just watch Legends of the Fall. It was a good death.
Okay, I'll watch it.
You've never seen it?
No.
Oh, you're on the cusp.
Yeah, I know. Oof. I have been for a long time, though. All right. So podcast things.
Back to your rip one off, is what you said.
Yeah, I was going to rip That's off. Great.
Oh, rip off.
Rip off.
Oh.
One of my favorite podcasts, pardon my take, it's a sports podcast. I'm sure they need me advertising for them. but they do this little bit, and so I'm going to ask you this, kind of the same question. Boots Hodges commented on Instagram. He said, Johnny is a great guide and an even better person.
True statement.
Is he?
What, a great guide or...
Is he a better person than he is a fishing guide?
Yes.
You think so?
What percentage? I don't think there's a better fishing guide on the planet than
Johnny. So you think he's the number one guy on the
planet? Johnny has been my species.
The best person?
I didn't say the best person.
No, but that's what this guy's saying. He's a great guide and a better person. Well, if he's the best fishing guide, I don't think he's a better person than he is a fishing guide. He's a great dude. Johnny's one of the best guys I know.
Are you jealous of Johnny? Is that what this is?
Yeah, I'm so jealous of Johnny.
Johnny has always been, you've heard it 100, he's my species indicator.
Yeah.
If you don't like Johnny, there's something wrong with you, and I don't want to really be around you.
I agree.
Like this, that's like when dogs get weird around people.
Yeah.
There's a reason. Mm-hmm. Johnny is the best guide I've ever seen. But it's because he's such a great person. That's 50% of Johnny's being a great guide. A lot of people are as good a fisherman. I mean, there's only so, you know, very few people can database everything Johnny does for 15 years and remember what hatch happened on what day in what section of the river on at what time of day. But he has no bad. He has no evil.
Yeah, he does.
Just when he looks at it, he's pissed at you. That's just pure fear. That's why you piss yourself when you see the bear.
Yeah, exactly. so that's, like I said, that's a bit that another podcast does when people, they talk about football players, like, you know, like J.J. Watt. They always talk about him, right? Well, he's an incredible football player. He's an even better person. No, he isn't. He's one of the best. He's a top .01 football player ever. And he's a great guy, but he's not Gandhi. So I just thought that comment was funny. It made me chuckle.
I like it. That's the only one? That's the first one.
That's just what I wanted to bring up. All right. So this next one, this question from Cole Hain on Instagram. He says, y'all always say Pertagons ain't got soul. Challenge accepted. This Pertagon was tied with a line from Aldo Leopold's Sand County Almanac. I was filled with soul when I tied this, remembering the countless days in my 20s exploring those sandy counties in central Wisconsin. Days when I beat gravel in a shitty Hyundai. I'm not sure I said that right. Dusty as shit, fallen tips from an old timer at a quick trip. Looking for ditches where the Browns hadn't taken over. I'm in North Carolina now and still hunt the natives. If I ever make it back to the North, I'm fishing the soul out of this bug. Then he's got a picture, which I'll put in the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
You see, he cut a line out of the book and used that as the body.
It's got style. I wouldn't say it has soul.
All right, so what's the difference?
That's essentially a piece of non-reflective mylar. It has nothing. It It replicates nothing in our world. It does everything I was taught, and I've taught everybody for hundreds of years about entomology. It has nothing.
The bird.
I'll give you, it's cool as shit.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a difference between having soul. It's like saying a Pertagon has the same soul as a Lady Caroline. Right. You should scratch your fucking tongue out with a fork saying that. It's got style. I mean, yeah. It is probably, arguably, the coolest Pertagon I've ever seen in my life.
It's the coolest Pertagon I've ever seen.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. I mean, and the thought process.
Yeah.
That guy's got class.
Okay, so he's got class and style, but the fly's got no soul. He's got no soul.
Doesn't mean it won't outfish.
I think that's a compliment, too.
Probably will outfish most of my favorite soul flies.
Right.
But it's got class. It's got style.
Class and style. No soul. So, Cole, I still think that's a win. I think that's a win for you. Let us know if you do get a fish on that. That's a pretty cool idea. I like that. Somebody's going to take that.
Yeah, somebody's going to steal that from you, Cole.
Somebody's going to steal that and do.
Hey, he's the OG.
Yeah, he's the OG. At least that we
know. Unless he stole it from somebody, which I don't think so. Put a lot of effort into that.
All right, next question. This one comes from a different Cole on Instagram, Cole Guilford. He says, Braden, I have a physics question for the podcast, even though you said you're not physicists. We are from West Michigan, so we are primarily on some very large tailwaters that Kelly should be familiar with. When fishing from a drift boat, is there a mechanical disadvantage to fighting the fish when the boat is anchored? I'm talking about 20-plus browns and steelhead either swinging, stripping streamers, or even decent brown trout on dry flies. If I hook a good fish, my instinct is to drop anchor so I don't float through the rest of my run and potentially miss out on more fish. Do y'all think staying anchored greatly increases my odds of losing that fish? With that being said, if the fish is screaming hot and into my backing, I know I'm chasing the fish no matter what. I return my shopping carts, so I'm not totally brain dead.
Well, he kind of answered his own questions. I mean, I would prefer to chase the fish, unless he's not going anywhere. I mean, most of my big fish don't get 30 feet from the boat anyway.
Yeah.
And if it's downstream from you, it's quite a disadvantage to you. Mm-hmm. Especially if steelhead gets below you, you're in deep shit, right? But unless he's on the Muskegon or the Big Manistee, most of them he could get out and run if he had to. But he's gonna, the other places in the big, on the PM, he wouldn't either, but I think it is a disadvantage to let the fish get below you, but if he doesn't get below you and you're fighting it like you would on foot, go for it.
Yeah.
But even on foot, you don't ink your ass. You know, you're gonna chase your fish if you have to.
Yeah.
And you chase when they're going below you, or you're at a big disadvantage, depending on, like, if you see backing, you are so screwed. When a fish is 100 feet below you, 120, whatever, you are at such a, your chances just diminish greatly to sit planted like a mailbox. But if you drift down to it, now your fish is going to drift with you. So that's, they'll keep going too, because most people, they're on a boat and they'll just keep reeling like hell trying to get the fish. The fish is still bulldogging down. But yeah, I think you're at a, just, if the fish, because you said that when it's, if it gets below you, that he said when he sees backing, that's a long ways.
That's a long ways.
Yeah. And so, but there's always, in particular, steelhead, you might be anchored up on a run. I don't want to, depends if it's, if I'm in a sled, shoom, gone, come back. But if I'm in a drift boat, you probably aren't coming back. Yeah. So I would say, yeah, you're in a disadvantage, but I think he answered his own question. It takes off when it gets below him.
Yeah, I think, yeah, exactly. Too far. If that fish gets really far below you, go chase it. I
mean, 50 feet, you're in trouble.
I remember
that's a long ways. That's the length of this building.
You know what's funny is,
well, this building's 60, but
every fish I've ever hooked on a spay rod, I start out in a horrible place.
That's because it's so far away from
that's you. The nature of it, right? Yeah. It's like, I was talking to somebody in the shop the other day about that. They go, so why do you swing? Because isn't it like, even if you hook a fish, it's just the worst percentage way to hook them, being really far below you, pulling the fly out of their mouth. I'm like, yes. Like, so why do you do it? Ah, that's fun. I like it. Whatever. It's cool.
It's no different than single hand swing.
Yeah.
It's no different than single hand swinging on the Pier Marquette. You might be 30 feet below you.
Yeah.
If you set up on them, they're going to roll it, go crazy. And I don't really think they have much particular jumpy fish. Like when you set up and they go jump, they don't know which way they're going. They hit that water. If they're going down, they're flying.
Yep.
If they're going up, you'll see they'll run up too. But
I mean, they can haul ass up.
They can do a lot of stuff, but it's not a calculated thing.
We were talking about it. I think Chuck was talking about it the other day when, you know, when a fish starts like humming upstream and that line starts vibrating like a guitar string.
Yeah, it's the greatest.
It's just slicing water up. Yeah. It's cool when you get a fish that does that. There's some power.
It'll happen someday. Someday. It's coming to you.
Yeah. Hey, come on. I think I might have talked about this, but one of the steelhead I caught earlier this year, the water dynamics on fly lines are really interesting. And there's way more drag than a lot of people think. And it hit me again.
Swinging? When, you were swinging?
Yeah, swinging. Yeah. And this fish was...
exponentially.
The first run, it took me, you know, not deep into my backing, but in my backing, right? So I'm, you know, well over 100 feet of line.
Let's be fair, though. It took you into the backing, so it had to, what, go like 5 feet?
No. I wasn't... Well, it was like a 40-foot run, probably.
Oh, okay.
So it made it into the backing.
Okay.
And then, you know, it starts kind of chugging upstream, and I'm looking at my line, and let's say if I'm facing dead downstream, my line is at 11 o'clock. Well, all of a sudden, that fish starts cartwheeling out of the water at 9 o'clock. And I'm like, oh, my God, I have... Yeah. This massive downstream belly, and it's just
it's coming back.
Your fish is always, oftentimes it's not where you think it is when it's a long ways out. Yeah, you'll have a giant bow.
That is one of your advantages. Long, I mean, if that fish turns and does something, and it does turn upstream, and that line's below it, even on a single hand swing,
yep,
you got 20, 30 feet below it, it's just going to hum right past you. Mm-hmm. It's the greatest.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly what that fish did.
Keep your line up. I watched a TV show. We were talking about fighting fish. I watched a commercial. No, it was a news thing. It showed a guy fishing. He's over on the, he's on the Yellowstone, and he's got this little 12-inch fish jumping, and you can see him going like this, and he's just reeling. You can almost see his eyes are closed. He's doing what we were talking about the other day. Hands are up here. Fish is jumping over here, jumping over there. Never once does he look anywhere except just like... He's like this, and he's just like reeling as hard as he can, arms straight over his head.
That's ever since
I hook a fish.
I remember you told me that maybe my first year working here, some of, you know, I hate people that put their hands over their head when they're fighting fish. And ever since then.
I hate the people. I hate the style. Yeah.
Right. Ever since then, anytime I see it on the river, I just
cringe.
Oh, gosh. Just like, wait.
Why are you doing that?
This is weird.
No, that was
this is really
it
weird.
Was full on. It was on the news this morning on the really? Bozeman news.
Was it a commercial or something?
No, it's news fine. Segment? The whole thing about the park having less people less workers,
staff and all that.
Staff in certain areas, and so you know, but fishing's still open to this and that. And of course, they showed the guy there with the. In his defense, he also had neoprene waders on, so I'm not certain the last time he fished. So, so yeah.
Don't be mean, though.
No, I mean, he may not fish a lot.
Right.
Although it is pretty chilly, so maybe he's smart and is fishing his neoprene.
Shit, I could have used him the other day. Chuck, Nate, and
I still have neoprene waders.
You do?
Hmm? Oh, yeah.
I'll take them.
I love them.
We did a little experimental float, and it didn't go well, but... you know, it was 33 degrees with a 20-mile-per-hour upstream wind. I put on every layer I owned, and, I mean, in the parking lot, I was cold. I could not wait to row. Although the first, you know, 10 minutes of my rowing, I was trying to figure out, you know, now my hands are exposed to the wind, and my fingers are numb, but I'm warm, so I'm taking hats off, putting hats on, moving gloves around, and Nate and Chuck.
I go straight into snowmobile suits or bibs and snowmobile jackets.
Yeah.
And I just found, when I was cleaning out the taxidermy thing, I did that fish the other day. Mm-hmm. There was a bag on top of it. It's my White River bag because I'm in a sled and by myself.
Cold.
I had 26 pairs of gloves in it. I had two pair that were other gloves, but they're these, I can't remember what they were called. And they're the only glove, they have a leather... They're made in Wisconsin. They have a thin deer hide palms. And they're really pretty thick fleece on the outside.
Yeah.
And my, you know, my stripping hand, it's about 2, maybe 3 to 1 that my left hand, I can keep the same glove on.
Yep.
But when, as soon as my hands are in any way even start to feel chilled, off go the gloves. Boom, boom. Brand new set.
Wow.
I've got 26 pairs with me.
Huh.
And they go in, I go home, they go to a dryer someplace, or what if I've got one in the room, whatever. Yeah. Everything's fresh in the morning.
And they don't smell like mildew?
Hmm. Probably not, no.
My gloves fucking reek.
That means, yeah, cleaning them.
Yeah.
Or drying them.
But
there is no way guiding, you know. The big thing is, in Michigan, when I was guiding so much there in the winter and the spring, the freaking anchor ropes. If you didn't have to pull an anchor rope, which Ray Schmidt, arguably one of my favorite guys back there and one of the smartest for sure, he was the first guy I saw. I think I said that one of these. He put electric winches on his cataract, even.
Yeah.
And everything he owned. And one of them had freaking buttons on the handle on his drift boat.
Yeah.
And I said to him, "What are you, pussy? What are you?" You know, he's this giant guy, right? "Is he pussy? What's going on?" He goes, "That just added 10 years to my guide life." He's probably right. Maybe more. If you can keep your hands dry, and there was Mark Shimero, the guy that made them back there, they were spectacular, super quiet. If you could keep your hands dry, if you can keep your neck and your back warm, that's a giant one, right?
Yep.
And your feet and your hand. I mean, if one of those three things goes first, you're screwed for the day.
Oh, totally.
I mean, you're just like, once your feet are cold, that you are just toast. And that's why I have my neoprene still.
Yeah.
And you had to have really thick boots, not insulated. Everybody would tell you back in the day if you had boot foots, or if you had stocking foots, just buy bigger boots. The freaking water pressure's inside the boot, you dumbass.
Yeah, right.
It's just squishing your foot. Mm-hmm. And they had, if you bought cheap neoprenes, they'd have these cheap boots, and they would compress too, even at like 3-4 foot of water. Mm-hmm. I think it was Streamline that did the first one. Huh. And it had like corrugated, just, you could almost step on them. They wouldn't, your feet were like toast all day. I mean, you can have cold hands. You can get by because you're working them, right? But if your feet are cold, you never stop thinking about it. Yeah, the whole time you're out there, you're just screwed.
So on that note, I was actually thinking about talking about this anyways.
What were we talking about?
Don't remember. The best class I took in college, or at least the one I learned the most from, was called Outdoor Leadership. And one of the days, one of the things we learned in that class was layering, kind of how to layer different mm-hmm. materials and what they do. And, you know, basically for fishing, wool is the best thing you can wear. If it gets wet, it still retains some of its warmth.
Is this why you baited me with this question earlier?
No, yeah. I just wanted to talk about it now. Fleece is number two, right? Puffy does nothing when it gets wet. And cotton is the worst thing you can wear. It sucks.
So puffy, if they were down, but they said that the Dacron things, the puffy Dacrons, didn't absorb it, so you could shake them out. Mm. I don't know if your puffy jacket's coat wet, you're screwed, dude.
You're screwed.
Because everything's wet, you own.
You're screwed.
You went in.
And then kind of on that note, we're now carrying these Grundin's pants, the fleece ones. Have you seen those?
Oh, man.
Yeah. Me, Chuck, Kyler, we were all wearing them up at Nate's trailer the other night, and Nate goes, "So what's the deal with these pants? You guys Club? Fucking matching?" Yeah, they are incredible. They're for an underwater pant. They're the best I've ever worn.
It's
just really thick fleece.
Super thick.
Yeah, it's really thick, and it keeps.
But it moves. You can move in it. It's not all tight on you. And that's the problem with wool when you get. When we grew up, we were fishing your hunting pants, right?
Right.
With the cotton long johns and your wool pants. And it just clinged to everything, you know. There's new stuff now, but it was, but you stayed warm as long as you didn't fall in.
Yeah.
Then you drowned. Because they're pretty heavy.
Yeah. but yeah, so for winter fishing, I mean, that's coming up. We're doing a lot of it right now. It's been really cold this week.
I think it's really cool to see. You know, I said the SST when we were talking about when John asked the advancements, and he said, I don't remember what John said, but I think he did say apparel.
Bucky?
Yeah. Was it Bucky? I thought it was John.
Yeah, Bucky was asking about the advancements in fishing.
And so... But I mean, you really, in particular, and it's, I did that thing for when Squalla's weight or, you know, the way it stretched, but this isn't necessarily a techie thing, but when we were talking about freezing, when I brought up the whole glove thing with, that's for in my jet sled, I'm by myself, I'm in the boat, and I got, when Squalla first came out with their jacket, it was a little longer than I liked, and it had pit zips. And I said, oh, I hate those things. And then, who said it? I can't remember if it
Kevin.
Was Kevin or...
I think it was Kevin.
Was it?
Yeah.
And he goes, no, they're not pit zips. And he goes, and I reached through that pocket, and I had the waders on, and I reached right into my fleece outside, but it goes against your body. Yep. There is no inside to it. You go right inside your waders. And I immediately saw me like this going upstream with my hood down, trying to keep this hand warm. What's this one's back here? I thought, there's a guy who fishes.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's like...
Well, you know Kevin runs a lot of sleds, too.
Exactly.
That's why
he saw me go, I went like this, and he goes, exactly.
Yeah.
But he's also a spay guy.
Right.
And so what do? You stand there with your... You know, and you're warm. And that doesn't seem like much. But... If you've got on my SST, it had fleece, but you reach in there and the sandwich is wet after a while, and it goes into outside, it's cold on the outside, it's not doing you anything.
Yeah.
And so what would you do? You'd pull your jacket up and you reach inside your waders and try to go like this, and you're fishing like this, right? And so those are advancements. I mean, seems like nothing, but until you're out there.
So you're out there in the shit.
Holy shit. Yeah, and you go, there's a cat that fishes.
Well, and then if you lose your hand, you can actually get it back, right? If you lose the feeling.
Oh, yeah.
Like that hand goes numb.
I would not suggest letting your hand go numb.
No.
Things go crazy when you do that.
Things get bad.
But that, you know, the advancements I see now in that, like Grundon's and Squalla's got some really thick one. There's... You can tell there are people that have froze their ass off and went out and go, there's got to be something different.
Yeah.
Because they're wearing it, mm-hmm. You know. If you own the company, you better be wearing that shit.
Yeah.
Right? And you're not wanting to be cold. So, and then, you know, look at Grundon's, all their stuff. That's for people who actually do fish for, like, real, for a living.
Like the...
That. You're out on
commercial
boats.
Fishing.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you know,
really,
yeah, you want it better freaking work.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to come in and hang you from the gallows.
Well, that's what we were talking about, like fishing guides. If you have a boat, I mean, anybody who's going to spend this much time on the water, especially when you have weird weather, which we get some weird weather. Sometimes storms roll through that aren't predicted. Sometimes it says it's going to be 40 and it's 28 and nasty, whatever. Grundon sells a rubber rain jacket for like $50.
I said that in a different podcast. Yeah. I didn't have a rubber one. They weren't as good then.
Yeah.
In my boats, and I had them in the sealed bag, and I had two. It was one of the first bags where, you know, you push the air out of them and squeeze that thing.
Yeah.
It's like for sleeping bags too.
Uh-huh.
I had two sets of the cheapest vinyl, all double or triple, double extra large, I think, or double or triple, pants and tops.
Yep.
When your ass got caught, you know, you got your fancy, you know, Gore-Tex coat, and you're wet, I'm like, put this on. Because you may sweat, and people say, well, I'll be sweating. Well, right now, you're fucking freezing.
Which one would you rather have?
Would you rather be warm and dying or cold and dying?
Right.
You dumbass.
Yeah.
And I'd put that on, and you could see people, everything's trapped inside.
Mm-hmm.
Kept one in my boat, two sets, all my entire guide career. Matter of fact, they're probably still in one of the boats because I left it in there, I think. I can't find the bag anymore. But they're those cheap-ass green vinyl Columbia, I think.
Yeah.
And I think a set was $29 or something.
They're not comfortable.
No.
They're not
Grundon's, you could actually work. They actually breathe a little. They've got those things in their armpits, I think.
It depends. They've got so many different jackets, but like they have some really affordable rubber stuff that is. Mm-hmm.
And every guide out, guide out there should be listening to this.
Yeah.
Because.
Or if you have a boat and you fish in the winter or the fall or the spring.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of really good, super insulated, super. I'm more worried. I mean, I've got an old set of bibs, Extreme, and the top. I mean, it's for ice fishing is what they're for, right? I've never been cold ever. I don't give a shit. I might look like the Stay Puff Marshmallow Man, but you're warm, right? I mean, and you're not going to wade in it, obviously. But guiding, we were talking a while back about what makes a good guide and being, you know, I don't remember what podcast it was, or maybe it wasn't ours, I don't know, but I was talking about never having to ask for something on the river and never once getting caught with your pants down. I mean, and that's getting caught with your pants down. You got a client that is, you ask them, do you have anything? Well, they're going to say yes. And they got a, you know, they got some cheesy little freaking jacket for being on the golf course. And it's like, it's water resistant. Yeah, to spit.
Yeah, exactly.
It'll
repel rain for 15 minutes.
Seconds, I don't know. And then you throw one of those on. I can't tell you how many times that saved the day for me. Or like I was telling you earlier, somebody falls in.
Right.
And then we were talking about this earlier, about when the guides got wet and got hypothermia. And that happened to me guiding Chuck and Nancy Sheely, which is a great story. Chuck, we were just below Beard Bottle Bend. Nancy sets up on this fish and goes absolutely straight out of the boat in one of the deepest holes on the PM. It's got to be 10 feet.
That's a Bassmaster Elite set right there. She's committed.
She set up on it, and it ran at her. There's no pressure, and she went like that. And she had on neoprene, and she had everything you could get on. And I'm like, but in midair, Chuck grabs the rod. He gets the rod, and I'm like, shit, whoof. And I underdog it out. I mean, I did a straight dive off the boat. And it's deep, right? She's got so much freaking clothes on. Neoprene waders, a giant puffy jacket, about three sweaters. And she went right straight back. And it's one of those extreme hoodies that comes way over your face. Yeah. She really didn't get wet. She jumps. And I get her, but she's just sitting there, right? You can't just stay there. And I jumped in the way. I come up and I drag her to shore. I had neoprenes on, too. But I had a sweater on. Mm-hmm. I had a fleece and a wool sweater. And so I'm soaked. And so I immediately get her to shore. And she says, I'm fine, honey, I'm fine. She says, I'm not wet. I says, Nancy, I had to go get the boat again. Because the boat's out there, but it drifted down a ways.
Right.
I dropped anchor and you know, jumped out of the boat. And Chuck, I get Chuck, and he still wants to land the fish. He's the greatest. He's the funniest guy here. But I said, I don't know, water go down. So I'm scared to death that she's going to get. And I put the one set on her, but I also kept two sets of Extreme. It was the original Patagonia Capeline. I said, just take that off and just put this on. Well, I don't have anything now, right? And so I put it, and I fished for about 3.5 more hours, and I started asking Chuck about the little, see those little blue ponies up there running all over? They're little tiny bastards, about this big, and they run down the logs, and they jump up, and he goes, I think Nancy's cold. I says, what? He says, I think Nancy's getting cold. I think we should row out. I says, are you cold, Nancy? And she goes, yes. I go, okay.
Fine,
I just start rowing the boat out, and I got pretty hot. I mean, I was scared that she truly was.
Yeah.
I didn't know I had hypothermia.
Yeah.
50 degrees.
Wild.
Yeah. It's just like, and I was goofier than a bet. Not, I was rad. I mean, I was just like totally gone, but Nancy wasn't. That's your job. You're the guy on the boat. You ask them if they don't have it. Well, you better have some shit with you to fix it.
So that's what Nathan did the other day. Same thing, super cold day here. It's like 35 degrees and raining sideways and windy. And his clients show up to the shop in the morning. He comes over and he's like, I told him to put on every layer they brought with him. I told him last night to bring every layer. And I think the woman in this boat had like a t-shirt, a quarter zip, and then a light puffy coat, and then, you know, a gas station raincoat. Nathan's like, this is going to be bad, dude. This is not going to be good. And I'm over here. I was like, dude, you just need to tell him. He goes, I've told him 3 times, put more clothes on. And I don't think they wanted to buy anything here. They didn't think it was going to be that bad. They go out there, and, you know, 15 minutes in, the woman's like, I'm cold. So, of course, Nathan has a spare jacket in his boat. So he gives that to her, and they make it through the day. And the next day, Nathan brings in the Bulkley and another puffy coat and everything. So he brings, I mean, he was really on top of his stuff. Mm-hmm. I got to give him a shout out too, because the other day I was sitting in Scotty's trailer with him and Chuck, and, you know, we're watching football, having a beer, and, you know, his client, or he called his client, whatever, to plan the trip for the next day. I have never heard a more in-depth client call than he does, and he does it every single day. I mean, he's really on top of his shit. Have you heard him do this mm-hmm. before? It's so impressive. He's just like, okay, so here's what I'm thinking for lunch. Yeah. I've got these 3 types of soup I can bring. How do you like your coffee? Do you like medium, dark? Like, I mean, he goes through all this stuff, and then, all right. And the funny part of this was, he goes, so this is sort of how the fishing has been. Is there any particular type of fishing you want to do mm-hmm. that, you know, that will make your day better? And Chuck and I can't hear the client, right? But we just hear this kind of long pause. And then Nate goes, dry flies? I haven't done that in weeks, but yeah, we can try
it. In this raging wind and snowstorm?
Yes. Yeah. He's like, yeah, we could try it for a little bit, but the streamer fishing has been pretty good. So, but yeah, he's really on top of it.
But that's pro Jack, and that's my whole point. Every guy.
It's pro Jack.
If you want to... If you want to be a pro guide, and you think ahead like that, and you sure shit shouldn't have to think of yourself. You already know what you need. You're right out there. But, you know, I've seen guides that say, hey, they're the ones that didn't show up. It'd be a short day for them. Well, that's really pushing it. I wish I'd have heard that from one of mine so I could fire him just for fun. I mean, you want to have a real career. But, you know, in reality, you don't have to say that to anybody. There's a real guy that's going to do that already and say, yeah, I've been doing it all my life. Yeah. Yep. And then there's the other cat. But some of them haven't thought about it. But there's always some place you can always carry something. And even, like you said, just a simple jacket. I mean, you know it's cold. And, you know, people come, it happens constantly. You get Texans and Carolina people, and they get up here, and they've got a pretty good coat on. For there. But not for here. Right. And it's like, oof.
I mean, today was, my car said 44 degrees. I went out and fished a little bit this afternoon. Said 44 degrees when I pulled in. Like, that's not
bad. Is that you down below the grizzly?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw
you. Yeah. Did you see me catch those big fish?
No, I didn't.
3 good ones.
Did you?
On the swing, yeah. I'm on that Hardy Bougle now. Just screaming eats. And, one of them was... nothing over 18, but they're all just chunky, colored up, really cool fish.
I'll take your word for it.
I got a video.
You didn't catch anything
one.
In the 3 hours I watched you. I'm just kidding.
You need
three seconds. 3 seconds.
I don't remember what I said. Oh yeah, so it said it was 44 degrees, and like, you know, I find my layering changes too when we're coming out of summer. That first cold day, I need a lot of layers, mm-hmm. and then once I kind of acclimate to winter, I don't need as much, but. I got out with this big fleece on and a shell. And that first run I was in, you know, it's blowing, 25,
huge,
30
yeah,
out there. The first run I was in, my hands, I lost them. They went numb, and it's only 44 degrees.
Yeah, but that's not counting the wind.
Right.
There's the feel.
Yeah, there's wind chill. Yeah, yeah. So yeah. It probably feels like mid-30s.
Yeah.
And
your hands are wet.
Yeah. I mean, wind has a massive effect. So I guess the moral of the story here is, like, it's better to be warm.
I can tell you how bad it was, because when I got to the dump, first I came in and bitched because that freaking bear has just beat everything around here. You know, anything that smells like food is beaten up.
Well, shit, you see what he did to the duplex?
Grills? Yeah, they get to everything.
No, the screen door on duplex one.
I don't know if that was a bear or not. Maybe.
Did you see all the teeth punctures? And
I thought, this is from like a month ago?
No, it was a week ago. Week and a half.
Different one.
Yeah.
Nah, it was... But there, he just, you know, the dump trailer, it's all enclosed. They can't get in it. but it was left open about this much. And he's reaching in and pulling all that garbage out. It was everywhere. So I go over to pick it up, and it's all picked up. So I get to the dump. Yeah, that was nice. I open the door before I back the thing into the deal, and it's blowing about 30. I take about 3, maybe 4 bags full right in the chest.
This is so bad.
And I come back, and I said to Chuck, and then Johnny happened to be up there on his riding lawnmower. Very strange.
So I was really confused what was happening, because I felt like I missed out on the party, because you guys come in and you're like, Johnny's riding his lawnmower.
Where the hell are you guys? He was at Palisades. He mows all the way up and down, so when he's plowing, he doesn't have to hit sagebrush, and it makes drifts, so he gets ahead of it, right? But it came all out. I mean, that thing's 6-7 feet tall of dump shit in there, right? And I thought Kyler went and picked it up and just stuffed it in there. Mm. I wore it, and the wind's going like 30.
And was it a particularly maggoty?
Yeah, there was a few of those little creatures. And so then I find out that he did peg it all. That was just the shit that was already in there. Mm. I came back and I said to Chuck, thanks for doing that. If you ever do it again like that? He goes, I didn't do it. Kyler did. And then Shirley saved him. Shirley came in and says, I saw him put that in bags. There's no, Shirley, I took 3 bags full. And she finally convinced me that the bear had been reaching in there so long. But that had nothing to do with this story, except the fact that I knew it was blowing, because it took me, well, I had Johnny helping. Yeah. He was reaching into all that shit barehanded, never missed a beat. I said, just go home and do something, would you? I said, I'll do this. I have gloves on. It's all right. See what I mean? Better man than guide.
Yeah, actually, I think I might be wrong on that one. All right, let's jump to a new question. This one comes from Jay Kanashige. He says an email. He said, Kelly and Co, I asked this question to Brian of Mad River. He gave me his thoughts and advised me to ask the master. So if you don't mind, can you give me your thoughts on hook positions for 2-hook articulated streamers? He says he's trying to, he's tying some articulated streamers for the upper sack, for the big Shasta Lake rainbows that are moving up there. He's tied different combinations of 4 aft hook positions, hooks pointed down, 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 up, and up, down. For some reason, he hasn't done up, up. Anyways, I noticed most tires tie with points down, down, but I'm thinking that having one hook up helps avoid snag ups, plus having one with a point up and one point down helps to hopefully, I think
they're just words.
I'm really
sound
struggling.
Him out. It's all easy.
I think he screwed this one up, and now I'm short-circuiting trying to get it right.
Oh, blame our guest. That's always good.
Plus, having one with a point party. Up and one point down helps to hopefully it covers more angles in the fish's mouth. It wasn't my fault. See, I am basically illiterate. Please give me your thoughts on the matters as I'm tying some up this week, Jay. P.S. Kelly, I'm a big fan, and thanks for all of your insight on your books and videos.
Thank you, Jay. I have dealt with this for 30 years, and I'm going to have a caveat to this at the end. Don't let me forget. I did both. I did up, down. With the same thought process, I settle on both hooks down, mostly because there's more structure on the lower mandible. The top man, you know, the top of the jaw has virtually nothing. Mm-hmm. It's a round surface. On the bottom, you've got a lot of places that it's got a bite down.
Hooks can grab.
And if the tight and then the top and when one of the first flies that I did before we were articulating the way we started. As I wired a hook, or I lashed a hook on top of a long hook, they would continuously knock it over. They'd eat it and knock it over. And so that was a failure. And then I particularly like the way the keel effect of the, I think it helps keep the thing oriented in the position I've tied the fly to look like. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm tying the fly to have, in most cases, there's a reason. Like my bellies are always lighter than my tops because that's what the minnow looks like, or the sculpin or whatever. The leech, virtually everything has a lighter belly than it has a surface.
That's a basic defense mechanism, right? That if you're in underneath it, it blends into the sky. If you're above it, the dark matches the bottom.
The lighter bottom, when their bellies are lighter, like every fish has a light belly.
Yeah.
But things that are like leeches, they do. But once they get up, it's a lose for them.
Yeah.
Right? And it's in a two-tone, you know, there's a lot of argument about colors and... But two-toning, I think, is always critical. I just think it's always has been since the beginning of time. But the hook orientation, I like both down. And I've tried every possible configuration, including doing them sideways when I was trying to do the original flatliners.
Yeah.
That I had one sideways for some reason. I thought I could... It would run like that, but it didn't. It flipped it over and it screwed it up. And but I've tried them all for my flies. And some of it has to do with the buoyancy of the fly you're designing, what you're doing like that. But I've never seen a real benefit to having the back one. That's the one usually people put up.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
And so, and for multiple reasons, but remember that that hook does something. It balances your fly out. Right, so if your hook's up here, even probably with shanking, it's still going to try to. Its gravity's going to take effect. That hook's still going to. If you're on a loop knot, you know, on a, like a like when you do your steelhead stuff on your, it's still going to try to go back where it belongs.
Yeah.
And maybe not the little tiny ones. Maybe there's enough, you know, just the weight of the Dacron loop or whatever you're using for your loops, but. I just settled on it. I think it keeps the fly in the orientation I want it. That being said, the caveat that I was going to say, I don't think there's a better, and there's a reason. It's a very small fly for most of us. I don't know if there's necessarily a better hooking fly than a clouser. No. And I think they eat the whole fly, and it's in their mouth. I just think it's a tiny fly for most purposes. I understand people tie bigger ones. For the most part, they're this big. And it was primarily a bass fly, which they inhale their flies. They draw them back very fast, right? Yeah. But I've caught a lot of trout on clousers.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've caught a lot of things on them. And so, but I've caught a lot of saltwater fly fish on when the hook's up too. But they again come in and suck the thing in, right, and eat it. And but for orientation of the hooks on articulated flies, and I would also include steelhead flies. But again, a steelhead will eat from the back. They're squid eaters. They'll eat from the back a little bit more. but I still prefer my hooks down. You know, try it, do it, whatever you, I just, for what I do with my flies, the only one that ever stayed up was a tits up, which I don't even know if we make it anymore, but when they had the popper tails in
it. We do, yeah.
I think they discontinued it.
Really?
I don't think it caught
recently?
On people. Yeah, I think so. Or at least some of them.
We still sell it, but.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
It's called the tips up.
In your world.
In our business.
Okay, well, whatever.
Yes.
The tips up.
If you go to our website, it's the tips up. Okay. Kelly called it the tits up.
Whatever.
For whatever reason, they didn't like that name for a commercial fly.
Well, I guess. So
I like it. I think it's funny.
It was the tips up, the only one that I did have it. That original version, both hooks were up. The original version was done to drag on the bottom of Pyramid Lake. And it had a single popper head. And then I doubled it. But the original one was quite short. It was almost clouser-ish. Very heavy eyes on it, lead eyes. The body was the same, the articulate, and the other one's back. And then the first one I did was a single, like the peewee pop cray. Mm-hmm. But then I doubled it up because I wanted it a little longer, right? And I wanted it to bounce. And you could drag it on the bottom of the lake, and you never hook anything. And you can offset, you can change any orientation with the weight on weight in your hook. Mm-hmm. Like if you want your point up, all you got to do is wrap, you know, 3/4, 1/2 inch of 025 or whatever lead on top of the shank. It'll flip it over. It'll be heavier than the you just got to make sure it's heavier than the bend of the hook. Mm-hmm. And it'll flip your fly over like you want it, as long as you design that into it. Mm-hmm. But I really never saw, I catch so few fish on the back hooks of for streamer stuff, trout-wise. I don't pay too much. And when I do, it's usually outside anyway, so it wouldn't matter where
it is. Yeah, that's what I was noticing the other day when Kyler and I went out. I got a good fish, 22-inch buck, and we hammered them that day. We had a bunch of really good fish, and almost every single one of my fish was on the back hook, but it was on the back hook on the outside of the mouth, which means they ate the head. Mm-hmm. That middle hook
they T-boned
is,
it.
They T-boned it, right? Mm-hmm. Now,
and on that argument, it would be better if it was up, if they T-boned it on the out, because the maxilla is hanging down there, and you'd hook it up here.
Yeah.
As opposed to possibly that's a tighter spot on the bottom.
Right.
There's no, you know, indentation to speak of down there. So,
One thing you can run into, I think, if you don't have proper spacing between, you know, having one hook down, one hook up. And I say this, I'm curious what you think about this. I just heard this from Jeremy at one point when we got a batch of, I think there were Moorish mouses in, that, you know, they tie it on a big hook and then they break the hook off and they've got an upwards facing hook on the back, right? So it's essentially tied on a shank, but it's a hook and they break the hook off. Well, they sent us a bunch of them that hadn't broken that hook off. So they have one hook down and one hook up, like right behind it. Mm-hmm. You could weld a fish's mouth shut with that. Mm. So Jeremy looked at this like, we can't sell these. We need to either break all the hooks off or send them back ourselves, or break them off ourselves or send them back. Because if they're right on top of each other, you could close a fish's mouth and not get it open again.
It'd be tough.
It'd be tough. And like,
I don't know, that would happen very often.
It feels like a rare case, because even with an articulated streamer,
there's a lot of double hook,
and they can spin. Like even if you have both hooks down, that's the other thing.
I did a lot of Rapala stuff in my life that or whatever crankbait of any sort, two hooks. They do get a mouthful of them sometimes.
Every once in a while. Yeah. But the other thing I wanted to mention with that, right, is like you design your fly to have both hooks down. Mm-hmm. When a fish clobbers it, it's all out the window, right? Like it's, I can't tell you how many times I've had a, you know, two hooks down, like fishing one of your flies, and they are hooked in the top of the mouth with the front hook.
Well, they've crushed it.
They crush it, and like, and there's no guarantee where those hooks are going to end up.
They've ate the fly. And then you jerk on the son of a bitch like it's a tarpin. Yeah. Well, yeah, things move.
Something's going to move. Yeah.
Or they don't. And they've got a good enough bite, nothing happens.
Yeah, you know, I'd be curious to actually study this and see what the percentages are of, like, you know, how often you hook the bottom of their mouth when you're fishing hooks down. Or, you know, like the bite snack has an upward turn.
I very seldom have seen a fish hooked in the top of the mouth.
Really?
Not with the big flies.
I got 2 out of 3 today in the top, but top side, you
know. That is one thing. I'm talking about the, you know.
The actual inside the fly, mouth.
It's inside the mouth. It's here.
Yeah. No, it's always on their, like, lips or I don't know what the term is.
There's nothing in the top of the, inside the mouth. Just, you know, a trout's mouth doesn't look, well, browns can get some pretty gnarly teeth on them, but there's just not much cunt. I don't have one we can, other than that giant fake one, but. There's not that. There's something up there, but I'm just going with percentages that I'm thinking that there's more. When you look inside, there's an indentation. You know, it's tongues there, and there's just more stuff to get a hold of.
Definitely, I've noticed this swinging. I've been swinging flies a ton recently, and I know I sounded borderline suicidal a couple podcasts ago, asking for advice on how to get more big fish throwing big flies with spay rods. And of course, John Stenerson texted me right after and goes, hey, I listened to the podcast. come down and fish with me. I'll show you what I'm doing.
Which is funny
because I remember talking to John when we filmed with him, and he was the first person I'd ever talked to that sounded, and of course I didn't see him do it, but he told me what his system was, and it sounded like exactly what I was doing, right? Of animating big flies with spay or switch rods. And I'm sure others are doing it. I'm not claiming I'm the first guy to do it. Clearly I'm not, because Stenderson's been doing it for years. But I just didn't know of anybody
else. I'm one of the best anglers I've ever known in my life.
Yeah, he's really good.
Yeah.
He's really good. And so he told...
But he's also, you know, he didn't really fish with other people. John just learns. He's out.
Just does
things. He's super fishy, but he's such a great tire, an innovative tire, that he's always looking for... He's always messing with stuff.
He's a really smart dude.
Yeah, well, he's just messing with stuff when he's... And if anybody could make a fly move, he could design it into it.
So he sent me that text, and I kind of got this, you know, renewed sense of excitement about that. Yeah. And I think I've just been doing that a lot when they aren't really eating streamers very well. Because the last week I've hammered fish. I've done well. And not like massive numbers days, but I've got some really quality fish on, you know, bigger flies, animating them. And I was throwing the white fly the other day. We need to go out and watch this.
Johnny had a good day on the Kill Whitey.
No, Slick Willie.
Slick Willie.
Yeah, the Slick Willie. Yeah. He said that to me today. I'm like, yes.
Finally. He's the only guy that wasn't cracking the code.
Yeah.
At any rate, white flies.
On the white fly, I want to go into Jacklin's and have you watch these, because I think I can animate these things a lot better than I guess I thought or you thought. It was intentionally fishing high in the column with a big white fly at a shorter distance to be able to watch it. And I was pleasantly surprised with the different actions you can get on those. And especially, I think if, you know, I started tying or somebody started tying, somebody better than me, started tying flies specifically for animating on spay rods, then you could get
absolutely
pretty creative. You know, with really heavy.
And when I was doing it, we had very few.
Yeah.
And we really didn't have none of the intruder stuff was around there when I was doing mine. But the popsicle's pretty movie, and it didn't do much. But it's so light, there's nothing built in it to make it puff other than the material itself.
Right.
And that's what was getting pulled. It just was pretty fast there, but that inside wasn't bad. It took a really big pull to stop the fly, and then it did a little bit, but not. The current was always pushing the stuff back,
right?
So, but yeah, I mean, I hope there's something new out there.
Yeah.
I hope we haven't figured it all out and we just stop. I mean,
well, if we figure it all out.
This would be a great place for somebody to go, yeah, great, I'll show Gallup, that stupid son of a bitch.
Yeah.
I hope you do. I'd love to fish it.
Yeah,
you know?
Send me some flies so I can test them.
Yeah. I'd love to. I'm just saying, my experience, and that's all I ever, I don't pull shit out of my ass. I talk about what I did.
Yeah.
If I don't know, I'll tell you, I don't know. And I'm sure that, I mean, I've never looked at an intruder underwater. There's a lot of shit moving around that thing.
Yeah.
Right? I've seen them in those stupid tanks. I don't buy into the tanks. You know, that's just a constant flow.
That's perfect.
Yeah, you can make it do anything you want. Mm. But I would love to go see it. And it would spark me to want to do, I had a guy, I was going to bring the letter over, bring it next week if I remembered it, about, he asked me what keeps me coming back to the bites, and it's just that right there. It's like, shit, we can figure something out. It'd be fun. If nothing else, you just burn some time. And
like those, the bodiless weighted minnows you've been tying.
Mm-hmm.
That I think would be a really cool spay fly to get that drop. Cause
yeah, well, that one would drop. If that one didn't drop, we got issues.
Well, I was just thinking about the tits up. Mm-hmm. I want to go throw that now just to see if I can, you know, detension that and get it to go vertical and then tight again and get it to snap down.
That one might be tough. There's so much buoyancy around the popper heads that it just kind of straightens them back. Straight upstream, it was pretty cool. Right. Then we could make it do it.
Yeah.
And so,
well, but that's what I wonder is if I could throw this thing upstream, or slightly upstream, get a big belly in my line, you know, jerk it to get it chugging downstream and then
I've never seen anybody throw a spay rod upstream like that.
I do a lot of slightly upstream and get that big belly. Because that's what we're kind of talking about this the other day.
You're just doing a long parallel downstream with it.
So it
until it hits
it goes downstream and then it broadsides and then it comes upstream. But with that chunky floating line, it gets that big belly and rips downstream, whereas a sinking line goes under the water and you're tighter to your fly.
I do that a lot with my upstream.
Yeah.
Where I'll swing it down and run a parallel.
Yeah, I watched you fish jack, and it's the same thing, right? You're throwing slightly parallel upstream and getting that fly down and then across.
Well, and I'll fish even in shallow stuff where I want to run a parallel seam. Mm-hmm. I'll throw it up, mend it, throw the lines. And if you do it right, you could have a 30-foot straight downstream pull because all you have to do at that point, all you got to do is pull against your line.
Yes.
Because it's the belly's pulling it. And it goes straight downstream.
That's what I was arguing with Nate about this when we floated. Because
a boat, you can make it almost eternal.
That's what I was doing, right? Is I was throwing upstream, getting a belly. Because I was doing a hook cast, right? I'm getting that fly's landing directly above the line when it lands. And, you know, I've got maybe 4 or 5 feet of line that's in the same parallel, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's below the fly. So it starts coming downstream. And I'm tapping upstream against the belly.
Yeah. And Nate's like, animating the fly.
Nate's going, you know, you need to pull downstream, otherwise your fly turns. I'm just like, watch it. It's white. It doesn't. Because
it's straight down.
If you can throw that hook. Now, he's used to watching his clients, right? They're laying it out fairly flat.
Well, with a sinking line, I have to throw it, hit, and mend it in basically before it even touches the water.
For sure. It takes some fancy casting to
do it. Very quick. But if you can get 10 feet, 15 feet, phew, I guarantee from a boat, you could go 40 feet with that fly going straight. Now, and you mend up. If you mend down, doesn't really matter. You just got to move the line. It's so easy to pull against it because it's just chasing the belly.
Yeah.
It's even easier with a sinking line because you aren't going to move that 10 or 15 feet that's underwater.
Right.
And tap, 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 and it's just doing its thing.
Yeah.
Quite sure it's in the book.
I think it is. I read that book once. I read it a couple times. But yeah, that's kind of what I've been
screwed. By the way, one of the first times I've seen somebody do that really, really successfully was John Stenerson.
Was it? Yeah.
Yes.
He's pretty good. but yeah, so I've been working on that kind of with this renewed sense of urgency, I guess, on animating spay retrieves. And then I think that mono running line adds in, you can do it at distance with a mono running line. Cause it's the same concept as Euro nymphing. There's no weight to it.
Mm-hmm.
So you have this really tight connection, even at 50 feet to your shooting head.
With this downstream thing.
Anyway, I mean, you're really tight. It's almost like you cut out that distance when you're running mono. Now, if you're running an integrated line, you know, it's like traditional running line. You don't have nearly the control or the tightness to your head. And then, you know, fish whitefly, you can see what it's doing, but it's pretty neat.
Practice.
That's the other thing. I was trying to get Chuck and Kyler. We found a little pot of fish that are lake fish that are pushing up, and they're just sitting kind of in this tail out. I'm not going to say where it is because I've been getting them down there. but the other night I went 2 for 9 in there. And just, you know, luck of the draw, bad luck. Mm-hmm. A lot of those fish started cartwheeling downstream, turn, come up at me, and I lose them, whatever. It's a great day. It was a freaking awesome day. I got 9, like, really solid grabs, swinging flies. And what I was doing, lacing my fly out there, and I never hooked a fish when I didn't lay out a perfect cast. Because the moment, if that cast rolled out flat, the moment it lands, it's fishing, right? And I'm throwing basically 90 degrees. So I get a downstream belly and that fly's racing across broadside. That's how they wanted it that day. And so Chuck comes down to the spot where I was hooking fish after I reeled up and walked up. And a lot of swing guys have this muscle memory of throw a cast, mend upstream to slow the fly down. And I kept going, no. If anything, mend downstream. They want it broadside and ripping.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like 4 or 5 casts before he finally like throws it out. Oh, shit. Okay, all right, I got to go left. And then he told me he went out with Kyler the next day and he had to do the same. No, stop fucking pointing right. Like, push it left. But
that would be hard for me because I was always single hand. So, and that was
the mend out that way.
to slow your fly down.
Right. And everybody thinks, you know, slow it down, but it's, Kyler was asking me questions about it after. He goes, so what do you do if you're stripping your fly in and they eat it then? Like, well, I'm going to listen to the fish and I'm going to start stripping my fly or animating it, jerking it, jigging it, something. Because if they don't eat it, you know, if you go through a great run where you know there's fish and they don't eat it on a slow swing, broadside it, strip it, listen to your fish. Do something different.
Do something. We can do bands. I don't care.
All right, let's do...
I used to say at the same time.
What's that?
I used to say the band and then the song I was thinking of.
Yeah, all right, let's do band / song of the week.
What about stuff behind the counter?
Oh, let's do that first.
Okay. Oh, how about pissed off?
Oh, you got something this week?
Yeah, I got something.
Oh, Kelly's pissed again. This is good. All right, what are you pissed off actually, about, Kelly? What about
people who tailgate that don't know how to pass.
Mm.
I was following this giant oversized rig up the road today. Always seems to be somebody that has a car capable, or it's one of them six-star Subaru things where, and they will, they will sit behind a freaking semi and they'll go way to the right and then they'll pop out like a little minnow wheel on a stream.
Yeah.
Oh shit. Yeah. Back off the son of a bitch and look. But I must have watched this gal 15 times. She had a mile and she pops out and she stays there like a minnow does in the stream, you know, and then goes back in. She has a full mile behind.
She's getting freaking eaten by a brown trout.
Oh my God. If she, that's what I was just going to say. If she was a minnow, she'd get T-boned by a brown trout.
Uh-huh.
And it took her 7 or 8 times to get out. By this time, I think the car behind, you know, the guy that comes behind it with the oversized, I think he wants to pass just because it's bugging her, him. And I was like, if you can't, why do people get so close behind it? Back off so you can see what's happening and just hit the freaking go button.
I remember.
Just when, go. Your car won't do anything crazy if it gets over 80. Don't worry.
I remember when you were, when we were coming back from Whiting and you were griping about this. You're like, oh, why would you get so close that you can't see?
Well, then they do the stupid shit where they zoom out.
Yeah. Well, not everybody has a truck that can go 150 like yours.
Every car made today can pass anything. The freaking car, the truck was doing 23 miles an hour. 23, big rig that's like, it makes a semi. He was pulling, this is an actual oversized load, right?
Yes.
But not so much width-wise. It was just, it was like a bridge abutment or something. Yeah, it was just long. Really, and she would get right behind it and do that zoom in, zoom out, zoom in, zoom out. Meanwhile, we were coming around the corners. We're coming up to Driftwaters. Mm-hmm. So right when it straightens up, that's a mile.
Yeah.
She couldn't get it done.
Oof.
Couldn't, there never was a car coming, ever.
That's not good.
At that, the truck is doing 23 at this point in front of us.
Yeah.
A freaking bicycle could sit out to the side and hit the go and make it.
Put me on a skateboard if you get past it.
Oh my God, I wanted to just pull over and say, let's talk. Can you just think about it? But they'll do it with any, when they see those people doing that. And then if you're going to put your, if you're going to be an asshole like that and sit, she's the first car behind it. Turn your freaking blinker on when you're going to pass. By the way, it's your responsibility to look in your rearview mirror to see if I'm pissed off and I've already passed 20 of you. Because it's like, I have the right. You have to look to see if somebody's already passing.
It's That's a and good she, rule of thumb is look in your mirror before you pull out to pass.
She, another guy came like this. Holy shit. She zoomed back. I thought she was going to go in the ditch. Well, because he wasn't passing. He was just going to follow her.
Right.
We had a freaking mile. Then she got back. Oh, well, doesn't matter.
I think I know her. I met her in the shop a couple of years ago. It could be the same woman who told me there's not a
Burgundy
single...
Burgundy Subaru.
Maybe. There's not a single... she said, and I remember this because it was blasphemy to my ears. She said there's not a single stretch of road between here and Ennis that she feels comfortable passing on.
There's 5 mile flat.
I know it's flat for 5 miles.
And it's a field.
It's one of the best stretches of road.
Where
to pass
would you
a car
feel comfortable?
In the world. There's so few stretches of straighter, flatter road.
With nothing, tree, fence line on both sides. You probably see if something's coming over it. I mean, okay, enough of this.
Yeah. Learn how to pass.
I have
learn how to drive.
Was this Alex that sent you the reel?
Yes.
I said last week, I forgot about this.
3 weeks ago, something like that.
Whatever. I went and looked at all my old Pfluger. I had never seen a Pfluger with the orientation set. These reels, and I thought about it later, I don't think you can reverse any of these. I think they were set. I don't know why the drag's here, and then most of them, you know, you had a line guard up here that fit around, but not this. These are riveted, right? But there's this little washer that fits inside the drag mechanism. It doesn't allow you to flip it. And all the other ones, the newer ones, you could.
Yeah.
This it's may this, be, and this, I, this is for Alex, because I don't know. I've got a bajillion of them. But this orientation, it locks it in. There's no way to flip this. Mm-hmm. Because of the way that's set up,
right,
with that washer. Now, maybe this is how the OG, I don't know.
Yeah,
I'd never seen them. They're always like back here, and then modern reels, you could flip the line guard from one side, but they're screwed together, the newer ones. This one, I don't think this was ever designed to do anything but, because this is riveted. And I said, you know, all of them could. I kind of overshot my skis there. It's like, I don't think these were ever this, but it'd be a good question. There's got to be Mike Adams, if you're out there. I fished with this guy down on the, where was I? But he had like 500 of these things. And South Holston. And I thought when I saw that one, I'd never seen one locked in there. And then I went home, I've got a bajillion of these things. I'm like, well, shit, the first one I looked at was there, and there it's locked in. So I stand corrected.
I bet a couple bucks.
Because I said you could flip them all.
Yeah.
But that's modern. I mean, yeah. I've got some this, 40s this versions, but this is a 30s version.
Yeah.
And
they're locked in.
But all the new reels, when they come for left-hand retrieve, this is back here.
Right.
But maybe that's how it always was.
Yeah.
I don't know. But
I bet a couple bucks that Academic Mailbox will have an answer.
Oh, my God. Yeah. It's so fun.
I love reading his comments.
So where were we?
Well, let's wrap it up. You got something behind the desk you want to show off?
I did. I got something cool. Another thing. This is from James D. Page II, Captain Retired. And he sent me, he said, I like your straightforward talk. He says, I'm the same way. It didn't help me in my career most of my life.
I like that.
And he
that.
Said, this is a challenge medal. And he just said, enjoy the pod, straight talk, blah, blah, blah. I've always done the same, even though it has hurt my career over the long run. Then he goes through his military stuff, and he just says this was a challenge. I'm trying to find it in there. Just a challenge coin. And it's very cool. And he sent it as a deal and said he had two.
Yep.
So he got this one for the back, but very cool. So yeah, sometimes it hasn't helped my career either.
Oh, definitely, really?
But it definitely didn't help a lot of marriages.
Remember that story about SA? We won't have to share it.
But, yeah.
That was a good one.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you just got to call it how it is.
Step on your own. Never mind.
Yes.
What was the other thing I was going to say? I can't remember. Band of the week, song of the week.
Whiskey Myers, Broken Window Serenade.
It's a good tune. Sad tune. I didn't prepare for this. Let me open my music real quick.
Oh, what are you kidding me?
Yeah,
it's like cheating on it.
You know what I'm going
to
do?
Oh, God, you're boring. We should fire you.
What? Why am I boring?
You shouldn't have. You're looking at your computer.
Yeah, I know.
I could come up with 10 more bands by now.
Well, I'm.
By the way, while you're cheating away, a bunch of the guys said that we should take. I didn't hear many, but I asked the guys downtown. They thought we should take this whole set downtown, and then rebuild it here.
Okay, so that's what I was going to mention. I'm going to go with "Cheating Woman," Lynyrd Skynyrd. It's a great tune. "Cheating Woman" will make you crazy. It's one of my steals. I've got three songs.
I have to look this up.
What's that?
I don't think I can remember this song.
You know that song? It's a good one. I'll play
it
for
everything
you.
They did.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's,
I just can't remember what it is.
He basically says he's going to knock down her door and shoot her. And
is that what you lefties do? You guys all crazy like that?
Yeah.
What this is?
Yeah, I shot a lot of women in my day. wait. So
knocked down.
We were talking about this.
They're always getting shot in that thing.
We got a lot of comments, and one guy called in, and Chuck said he was fired up about don't move the desk. Don't move this. So we've seen a number of comments. Some say keep this here, build a new studio.
I want to leave this stays here.
The desk.
The tie-in desk. Because yes. When we shoot our tie-in things, it's here, period, end of discussion.
Well, what I think one option is to take half of the shit.
Yeah, but I wouldn't notice it was gone.
No, you wouldn't notice. There's so much stuff back there. So
it keeps building on itself, too.
I know every week people send you stuff. So I think it'd be cool to, set up a new podcast studio. Obviously, keep this for the tying stuff. And make the new studio similar to this. Have it feel, there's a lot of wood, kind of homey.
Yeah, it'll always feel like that.
And then have, throw a lot of this stuff.
Last week when I was looking for the conservation thing,
yeah,
this was sitting here, and I knew I kept his card. And it was Steve.
Steve Vasichek?
Vasichek, whatever. I knew, I was feeling like, I said, I apologize, I can't remember. And I was like, I know that's there. And it was stapled to the back so I wouldn't forget, which, of course, didn't help me any. But too many headshots will do that to a person.
Too many headshots. All right. You got anything else?
No.
Did you kill anything while you were hunting?
I shot so poorly that I think Mel dumped me.
Tough.
I had a new gun with me, and I kept shooting over my birds, and it was the only time I ever just said, okay, just settle down and slow down.
Yeah.
And then it was a roll, yeah. But it was like, wow. I kept knocking I'd either knock the tail ass, the feathers off their ass, and then Mel would dump it, and then give me that look like a bird dog does when you go miss a bird, and it'll look at you like, do you know what I'm doing out here?
Not how your dogs look at people when they miss a fish.
Yeah, same thing.
Yeah, like really?
But my bird dogs always would look at me and say, pretty sure this is why we're here. But yeah, it was a pretty shit. It rained most. It was wet. Not necessarily rained on us, but it was wet.
Yeah.
I did fish Big Spring for about 30 minutes, just stopped at some place, and gorgeous river. Gorgeous.
Did you catch big fish?
I rolled my third cast. I got a 14-inch roll up on it, and I never saw another fish.
Perfect.
But it's a spectacular dry fly looking river. It's one of my favorite places, too. Just the whole lay of the land over there is so cool. But
yeah.
But yeah, that's all I got for you.
Right on. Well, that was episode 48. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends, like, subscribe, all that stuff. And we'll see you next week.
Hope you liked it. Hope it helps you out.